Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. I'm Harley Schlanger. I will be your host. It's December 29th, 2007. It's the last Saturday of the year. And therefore, it's entirely appropriate that today we will review some of the critical events of this year and look ahead to what we can expect in 2008. And importantly for the listeners out there, what you can do and what we must do as a nation to avoid a further catastrophic plunge into a new dark age. My guest will be Jeffrey Steinberg. He's not only an editor of the Executive Intelligence Review and a prolific writer, but a coordinator of both the intelligence activity and political operations for the LaRouche movement. We'll also be joined today by senior activists of the LaRouche youth movement, and yes, there are some senior youth members, Siri Martin in Seattle, and Keisha Rogers from the nation's capital. So, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harley. It's great to be here.
Unlike some years, which seem to wind down, to a whimper, 2007 is coming to a close with a bang. In the midst of an undeniable accelerating implosion of the financial system, Benazir Bhutto, the former president of Pakistan, who returned to her embattled nation as a leader of the opposition forces, was assassinated on December 27th. This is going to have and is already having profound implications for an already fragile world. There are charges and countercharges flying around, but Lyndon LaRouche has issued a statement today, The Hand Behind the Tragedy, in which he emphasized that there's something overlooked in all this back and forth, and that is that the assassination of Bhutto is part of a broader operation to unleash further chaos, and that the hand behind this operation is that of Anglo-Dutch financial interests, and that this is a response to the spreading financial collapse. Now, Jeff, I'd like to start by asking you to discuss why, under conditions of financial collapse, the Anglo-Dutch financial elite would wish to unleash more chaos.
Well, first of all, the current generation of leading British and, by extension, Dutch and some Wall Street circles typified by people like George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn, I have still a vivid memory of the fact that during the last big global financial crisis back in the 1920s and 30s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected president of the United States and brought the United States back to its founding principles, the American system of political economy. And Roosevelt changed the world and came very close to bringing an end to the power of the Anglo-Dutch financial oligarchy. Had Roosevelt lived beyond April 1945 and had been in a position to carry out his plans for a post-war world based on a community of principle among sovereign nation states devoted to the idea of global economic development and justice, the British and Anglo-Dutch imperial factions would have suffered their most crushing defeat in history. They know that. They know that that American impulse still exists. It's a deep vein within the culture and soul of the American population. And they know that Lyndon LaRouche is the leading representative of that tradition. So from the standpoint of these financial oligarchs, the worst nightmare for them would be for there to be a reemergence of the United States as a leading nation state in a collaboration among great powers of the world to put the world back in order and to adopt at least the sort of philosophical outlook and some of the basic policies that were associated with the Roosevelt New Deal and especially with the Bretton Woods system that Roosevelt created, which was a stable financial platform from which the world recovered from the destruction of the Depression and World War II, even though Roosevelt himself died. So, therefore, given the choice between a revival of a U.S.-led nation-state set of solutions to this crisis, the British oligarchy vastly prefers chaos and the bust-up of nation-states. Furthermore, they are very comfortable with the idea of unleashing targeted terrorism in various parts of the globe in order to create the kind of backlash in which populations willingly accept dictatorship and fascism as a preferred alternative to chaos. The old idea that Mussolini may have had some problems, but at least he made the trains run on time. He brought order to a chaotic situation in Italy, is typical of the way that these bankers are thinking. The crisis now is far more severe, orders of magnitude more deep than the crisis of 1929 through 1933. The only comparison is the 14th century blowout leading to the Dark Age.
One of the things that, people who have a hard time with what you just said have a problem with is they don't realize that during the course of 2007, an alternative to chaos was put on the table back in the spring when Lyndon LaRouche discussed the idea of a four-power agreement. And it's clear, as we've seen it unfold during the course of this year, that idea of an alliance between Russia, China, India, and the United States for a new Bretton Woods has at least begun to take shape. I wonder if you can just review a couple of the key developments on that.
Well, I think that there are two tracks, really, that embody LaRouche's promotion of an FDR-type solution to the global crisis. There's, as you said, this four powers perspective towards the idea of a new Bretton Woods conference, a new financial system after a bankruptcy reorganization of the present system. And then there's the specific initiative that LaRouche has taken since late summer here in the United States around the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which is aimed at not only avoiding the social chaos of mass foreclosures of millions of families losing their homes and being kicked out on the street, but also a reorganization under bankruptcy structuring of the commercial banking system, which is also a gone bunny at this point. So, look, this year is really quite dramatic, particularly on the Russia and China fronts. In the spring of this year, the Russian government, in effect, sponsored a conference in Moscow in April. Mr. LaRouche delivered a paper at that conference and then later in the spring traveled to Moscow and had several days of very important meetings. The conference dealt with the idea, longstanding idea, of building a canal under the Bering Straits and linking Eurasia with the Americas so that you have a global transportation and development corridor plan that defines a whole directionality for global economic cooperation going into the next 40 or 50 years. The fact that the Russians are now enthusiastically promoting this idea, the fact that they wanted LaRouche to be present to deliver a major paper at that conference is perhaps the single best indication that there is a very strong impulse in Russia to align with the United States that is ready to return to the policies of Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, we saw that explicitly in statements by President Putin in commemorating the 125th anniversary of Roosevelt's birth, but also in the succession which Putin seems to have lined up, which the Anglo-Dutch faction seemed very upset about.
That's right. He selected one of his collaborators, the Deputy Prime Minister Medvedev, to be his party's new presidential candidate, it's a virtual certainty that Medvedev will be elected president in March, and it's also quite likely that Putin will accept the position of prime minister. He led the Duma slate of his party that won a landslide victory. Putin does enjoy 70% or more popular support among the Russian people for having reasserted sovereign control over Russia's natural resource wealth, putting the economy somewhat back in order, removing the power of the oligarchs. So, yes, you've got this impulse, and I would also flag people's attention to the interview that Putin gave to Time magazine this past week. He was awarded the Man of the Year award by Time, begrudgingly, but nevertheless noting his unique contributions in the year 2007. And Putin made a very strong reference to a certain close relationship that he developed at the very beginning of his presidency with then-President Bill Clinton. And this obviously has significant implications as we look ahead to the upcoming presidential primaries and election. So I think U.S.-Russia is on a track, and LaRouche was at the center of one of the most important showcase developments around the improvement in U.S.-Russian relations, two of the great powers that have to collaborate to defeat the power of the Anglo-Dutch financial oligarchy.
And secondly, we saw some similar developments with China.
Exactly. More recently, just in the last several months, Lyndon LaRouche participated in a conference in Los Angeles that dealt with relations between the United States, China, Taiwan. And again, he laid out a very clear perspective for how to deal with the global financial collapse. And the very next day after LaRouche gave a keynote speech at this conference, all of the major state media in China, Xinhua, People's Daily, China Daily, all gave very prominent coverage to LaRouche's specific proposal that the United States and China be part of an initiating group of countries out to convene a conference to reorganize the entire global financial system. So a very powerful signal from China as well. And from discussions with some of my closer contacts in Washington who followed these developments very closely, their view is that China was signaling that they recognize that there is a new policy and a new policy apparatus in the wings in the United States, and that Lyndon LaRouche is the leading spokesman for what amounts to a wing of the establishment that is ready to go back to FDR. And the Chinese are signaling that this is fine with them, and they would be also very much pleased and anxious to participate as a collaborator with that kind of United States. So you've got Russia, China, the United States. India will enthusiastically go along with such an arrangement.
All right, you're listening to Jeff Steinberg. This is the LaRouche Show for December 29th, 2007. And we're talking about the amazing events of the last weeks of this year and what it means for the new year. Now, Jeff, you just outlined the advances on the four-power agreement, especially with Russia and China responding to the ideas of Lyndon LaRouche. Now, probably what a lot of people would assume is the weakest of the four in terms of that is the United States, which continues to be under a general policy direction of the neoconservatives acting on behalf of this chaos faction under Cheney and Bush. Now, at the same time, though, LaRouche's forecast of a financial blowout is now becoming, it's been forced onto the recognition of people. How does that change the situation with the United States?
Well, first of all, I would call everyone's attention to the July 25th, 2007 international webcast that Mr. LaRouche gave in Washington, D.C. In that webcast, he just flat out declared that the financial collapse process is underway and that this will be the driving factor in world affairs until it's either resolved through his kind of FDR solution or by some kind of financial oligarchical solution that brings the world into a dark age. And it was within only days after he delivered that July 25th address that the whole subprime mortgage blowout began in earnest with the bankruptcy of one of the major mortgage companies. Soon after that, a massive bailout of Countrywide. Within days after that, a major German bank, the IKB, nearly went under. It required billions of dollars in emergency infusions of funds because they were also heavily exposed in the subprime mortgage market. Since that time, the process of collapse, the blowout of the real estate bubble, the emergence of a full-scale banking crisis in the United States, all of these events have followed rapidly one after the other. And the solutions so far coming out of the Fed, the Treasury Department, and other central banks and major finance ministries around the world has been to throw up a wall of money at the problem. And that is simply no solution. That simply leads to the kind of hyperinflationary blowout that Weimar Germany went through in the fall of 1923. So
I heard President Bush this morning on his weekly address talk about how great the economy is doing and how well the economic growth is going, and yet we have the seeming paradox with his view coming forward in the declaration of states of fiscal emergency in California, in Kentucky, and also the mobilization on the grassroots level around the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act, which you mentioned earlier. What is the status of that, and are we going to see some action from Congress on that as the new year comes in?
Yeah, well, let me start by just simply saying that President Bush is completely disconnected from reality, and his episodes of outbursts are becoming more and more frequent and more violent and irrational. So this is a problem that's going to become increasingly more pronounced as the crises hit with greater force and greater visibility. His denial of reality around the state of the U.S. economy is something that psychiatrists will have to deal with probably through medication. On the HBPA, look, at that July 25th webcast, one of the things that LaRouche announced was that there would have to be a freeze on home foreclosures. And in the weeks following the webcast, he laid out three basic principles of how to both prevent social chaos by freezing foreclosures and setting up a mechanism for keeping people in their home and making certain minimal payments while the whole mortgage bubble shakes out. And he also laid out provisions for a federal bankruptcy reorganization of the nation's commercial banks, the federal and state chartered banks, as distinct from brokerage houses, hedge funds, and other players that are strictly involved in the speculative world. So with the launching of the HBPA, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, the entire LaRouche organization, led by the LaRouche Youth Movement, went into high gear targeting state legislatures, city councils, organizations representing local and state elected officials. And we have gotten a massive mobilization going in most parts of the country where we have state legislatures debating and about to vote on resolutions endorsing the HBPA and mandating Congress to take action. In Pennsylvania, we have over 30 cities around the state that have already passed resolutions endorsing the HBPA, and there have already been hearings at the state legislature. The bill will be introduced, I believe, shortly after the first of the year in California. It's introduced in a number of other states around the U.S. The LaRouche PAC website gives you an up-to-the-current moment map of where there's activity on this. The whole idea is that at the state and local level, the reality of the depression scale collapse is unavoidable. Every elected official is faced every day with constituents who are living through absolute hell. And so it's a very real issue at the state and local level. Yet, under our federal system, the states are forbidden from going into debt, and therefore there is no state or local solution. The only solution is action at the federal level, and the HBPA is the only proposal on the table that actually will work. So since the beginning of the year, when the Democratic majority 110th Congress came into power, we've seen a steady devolution of the effectiveness of the Democratic Party on Capitol Hill, to the point that right now the Democratic majority Congress has a lower rating among the American people than Bush, and they're in the domain of Dick Cheney with, you know, under 20% level of support from the American people. The Democrats squandered a mandate that they got last November, and the mandate was to impeach Cheney, end the war in Iraq, and shift resources into an economic recovery domestically of the real economy. And so the Democratic majority has three strikes against it on all three of those issues. And therefore, what we've adopted, what Mr. LaRouche has adopted as a strategy, is to build up tremendous pressure from around the United States into Washington to create excruciating pressure to offset the threats and the blackmail coming primarily out of the hedge funds and the Wall Street banks that don't want a solution that would reestablish FDR-type federal government control over the economy and over the U.S. dollar.
So, Jeff, just to bring this around to what we started with then, at this point, with that kind of pressure building, with city governments, county governments, state governments acting, with a level of desperation hitting people in terms of record foreclosures, record delinquencies on credit card debt, and so on, it's under these circumstances that the potential for an FDR-LaRouche solution grows, that the Anglo-Dutch choose to set off the explosives of assassination, war, and chaos.
That's exactly the point. And the assassination of Benazir Bhutto has British intelligence written all over it. And we will be publishing our own investigation and our own findings on this. But Mr. LaRouche has already issued a series of very powerful statements in which he basically said her assassination was a British intelligence operation. It was not based on local events in Pakistan or South Asia or even Southwest Asia, but it's based on the fact that because the global financial situation is such that the system is coming down rapidly, we're already 6 months into the worst financial collapse since the 14th century. It's for that reason that the British are going for global chaos and therefore are resorting to assassinations and other forms of irregular warfare to bust up the nation-state system and leave themselves as the last man standing to set the terms for the new world that will follow after this entire dollar-based financial system evaporates. And that's going to happen in 2008.
And I would recommend that people go to the website, both the LaRouche PAC website and also LaRouche Pub, to look at these statements that are already up from Mr. LaRouche and to follow through with our investigation, but most importantly, to get the sense of the historic context, that these are not just decisions made by a lone terrorist who decided to act on his or her own. So you can go to LaRouche Pub and LaRouche Pack. Also, for that July 25th webcast pamphlet, you can go to, you can call LaRouche Pack at 800-929-7566. And we'll give you that number again later on in the program. Jeff, one thing before I bring the two members from the LaRouche Youth Movement on to discuss the activity of the youth, one of the youth members out here handed me a pamphlet this morning and just pointed to the relevance of this. It was a pamphlet with two of LaRouche's webcasts from 2006, and it was titled Organizing the Recovery from the Great Crash of 2007. And this one, it was actually from the November 16th webcast, 2006. And he said when he used to take this out at the beginning of the year, people scoffed at the headline and said, what great crash of 2007? So I guess it just makes the point that you and I have made for a number of years that you're foolish if you overlook the forecasting capabilities of Lyndon LaRouche.
Absolutely right.
So Jeff will stay with us. We have we'll take your questions on email. You can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. We'll also be talking with Jeff a little bit more about the presidential race. And let me actually, before I bring in Keisha and Siri, I'm going to ask their patience just for another minute. There has been a recognition of the foreclosure crisis and the banking crisis in the presidential race. What is it that you think Hillary Clinton is getting at right now? Because she's running ads on this in New Hampshire.
Well, I think that Hillary has acknowledged reality, and it's a breath of fresh air in a presidential campaign that's gone on already painfully long without any acknowledgement of reality up until this point on the part of any of the candidates. So I think the fact that Hillary Clinton has come out and has directly and forcefully said that she will impose a total freeze on home foreclosures is a very positive step, and I think is indicative of the direction of thinking on at least the part of herself and some of her key advisors, including her husband, former President Bill Clinton. I know that in recent weeks, the former Treasury Secretary, Bob Rubin, has slightly disentangled himself from the mess at Citibank and is becoming more directly involved in the Hillary Clinton campaign. And he is one of the few people in the banking establishment who is saying to many Democrats in Congress that I've heard it from, that the system is finished and that there is not enough chewing gum and rubber bands to hold it together until the new president comes in January 2009. So I think reality is being reflected in Hillary Clinton's campaign in a way that we haven't seen it with any of the others.
Well, and I like the Rooseveltian echo or even the echo of LaRouche in her comments, where when she was asked by LaRouche Youth Movement members in New Hampshire about her call for a moratorium on foreclosures, she said, Wall Street is not too happy about what I've said. And, of course, that brings back memories of FDR running against the economic royalists of Wall Street.
I think so, that one other – Harley, let me say one other thing
sure.
on that just because I think it's very important. Take the lesson of Benazir Bhutto very seriously. Her assassination being a reflection of a flight forward on the part of at least a faction of the Anglo-Dutch oligarchy should be something that the Clinton campaign very much take note of, because Benazir Bhutto is not the only leading international political figure on that hit list. And if Hillary Clinton distinguishes herself as the one candidate who is serious about going back in an FDR direction and who has some competent advisors like her husband and Bob Rubin, who were, after all, toying with the idea of a new global financial architecture during the crises of 97 and 98, then that puts a very high premium on her head, and I hope that she and her key advisors are taking an added degree of caution, because she's absolutely right. Wall Street, and by extension, the city of London, is not at all happy with her. We are keeping a continuing watch on the comments and activities of Felix Rohatyn and George Shultz, because in a certain sense, they are two of the leading catpaws for the city of London inside the U.S. political and financial establishment.
I think we can just add to that that we've seen from one of their flunkies, the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, an indication that he's prepared to do what Wall Street wants, which is to rip up the social safety net and slash the budget in California as a way of dealing with a financial crisis that's bigger than the state of California, but deal with it exactly as Mussolini and Hitler dealt with the financial crisis of the 30s, as opposed to what Franklin Roosevelt did. So I think the warning that you just put out, that people should be alert for more chaos, more of this kind of behavior from these increasingly desperate financial oligarchs, I think that's very well taken. Let me bring in Keisha Rogers, who is a voice of reality in Washington, D.C. right now. I'm sure people from the LaRouche Show remember Keisha from her campaign for chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, which is now a couple of years ago. Keisha has been in Washington for the last months. And Keisha, it's been a battle to try and bring the reality of what's happening in the country into Washington, D.C., hasn't it?
Yes.
Give us a little picture of what you've been encountering.
Well, I'd say that right now, looking at the situation, as Mr. LaRouche has very clearly put it, that we are faced with a truly devastating blowout of the world monetary and financial system, that people who have chosen to escape to a virtual reality or try to deny the reality of what Mr. LaRouche has warned that we are currently facing are now being hit over the head with the truth and reality as to what the nation and the world at large is facing at this present time, in the lack of leadership that's being provided in the country, particularly from the Congress, and that lack of leadership coming from, as Jeff pointed out earlier, the fact that the mandate that was put forth and given to the Congress in 2006 after this, after the November election in 2006, has not been met yet. And you see a situation where there's truly an uproar throughout the nation right now, and looking at this reality and seeing that no true leadership has emerged.
On that point, Lyndon LaRouche had called for Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and probably the most visible figure of that Democratic impotence and incompetence. LaRouche called for her to step down. Do you think there's a reflection of this among some of the Democrats, a frustration building up in Washington?
Oh, most definitely. One of the things is that you have a situation where, as we've gone over the past few months that I've been here to, you know, address or to meet with some of the staffers or to address the congressmen, the thing that's holding them back right now is the insanity in the leadership coming from the top, from Nancy Pelosi and her financial backers, particularly of the Wharton crowd, which Jeff brought up earlier. And this is something that LaRouche has made it very clear that we have to take on, that you're not just dealing with the situation of demoralization and fear in amongst the congressmen, but these guys are truly, I mean, they're really being brought out by this whole financial Wall Street Felix Ruotin crowd. And we've seen this, to give you an example, just recently, just before Congress went off for recess, we saw this very clearly as some of the organizers here attended a meeting in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill with one Senator Schumer and former Treasury Secretary Summers. And what we found there is, you know, a devastating situation where these leaders, or so-called leaders, are going along and going along with the insanity of and supporting people like Felix Ruotin in the midst of this great economic crisis when, as we said before, you got millions of people facing foreclosure. And we've taken high responsibility as the youth movement is trying to bring a breath of reality and bring fight into the Congress right now to make sure that this faction that is completely against the idea that you're going to act in the best interest of the nation and the general welfare of the population is taken on. And so at this meeting, it was pretty devastating to hear that you had high support of the same individual who is buying out a lot of Felix Ruotin crowd, a lot of the leadership in the Democratic Party. But as we've stated before, this is the same gentleman, this is the same guy who is completely opposed to the ideas of Franklin Roosevelt and who has been key in the operations of complete fascist operations around the Pinochet networks, around the Chilean operations to overthrow the president of Chile, and involved in what we brought up at that meeting, the breakdown or destruction of the auto industry, where his name can be found signed right on the dotted lines.
And so the Democratic leadership brought in Ruotin as the so-called response to really the motion nationally around the LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act.
Right, to stop that motion.
Yeah.
To say anything but LaRouche that, and that's the interesting thing right now is that over the past month you've had about, I can't even count the number of proposals in dealing with the home foreclosures that you've had come out of the Senate and the Congress. And it's interesting that we got a report that the idea is, well, we don't know what to do. We have no solution on how to deal with this, so we're going to try to play around with formulas. And whatever you do, it can't sound like Lyndon LaRouche. And we have to make sure that that stops. And that's the insanity of the situation right now that we're currently facing, is that it really shows the true need for leadership and the importance of what we're doing, what Mr. LaRouche is representing, the leadership that he's representing, and the fight that's being waged across the nation, particularly by the youth by the LaRouche youth movement.
And Keisha, I'll bet you never thought to get back to sanity and reason you'd have to go to Texas.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to go over there, too.
Well, let me bring in also now Siri Martin, who has gone from coast to coast in recent weeks. She was in Boston for a while and is now back in Seattle. But, Siri, Boston, Massachusetts, that's another area of Ruotin's influence on the Democratic Party. But we were making and are making headway there with the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act, aren't we?
Yeah, it's actually been quite phenomenal, the work that has been done in the last, you know, several months since the HBPA was put forward by Lynn, where immediately Boston went into the State House and had meetings with virtually every office, House and Senate, And, you know, were open to having one, sometimes two, three meetings with us. But at a certain point when we came in subjectively and said, okay, well, we need motion, then the meetings closed, the offices closed their doors. And good thing we had already started a massive mobilization into city councils throughout Massachusetts, into Connecticut, and into Rhode Island. And we've had some significant headway made most quickly in Connecticut, but then just in the last couple weeks in Lawrence, which the idea is to get a connected impact going on in the local levels, where Lynn has laid out, you have a real natural leadership of local officials who are much more connected to the daily lives of their constituencies. So, yeah, we're at a phase of really shaking up the capital of Massachusetts and trying to break that stronghold that Rowhatton has really influenced and swayed within the capital of Massachusetts.
Well, now you're back in the Northwest, where the illusion is that somehow Seattle and Portland were two of the cities in the country that did not have a catastrophic drop in home prices, and so there's an illusion the crisis doesn't get up there, even though King County, the county in which Seattle's located, lost a bunch of money on bad hedge fund investments. So I assume there's a fight to bring reality into Bill Gates' land.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm still kind of getting my footing and getting briefed on what the situation is here around the HBPA, but I know that there was a signer onto the HBPA just last week from just south of King County. So there's an emergency system coming up in Portland to deal with a budget shortfall and just the overall bankruptcy of the state in February. And the Washington State Legislature is going to be meeting in a couple of weeks. So we're laying our plans.
So we'll expect to hear some big news from the Northwest.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Jeff, I want to go back to the presidential campaign for a moment, because this is, as you said, it seems to have been dragging on for so long now, and yet in a week, we're going to be into the first less than a week, just a few days. The caucus season will open in Iowa, then New Hampshire. At this point, what's your sense of this? Is there it looked for a while as though it was being shaped for a Hillary-Giuliani race, and of course, all those things are subject to dramatic change. What are you hearing?
Well, first of all, about a month ago, after we did a little bit of background work on Rudolph Giuliani, Mr. LaRouche came to the conclusion that Giuliani's prospects of being the Republican nominee or winning the presidency were near zero. This guy has more skeletons in his closet, from mafia family background to a collection of criminals in his immediate entourage. LaRouche's view is that Giuliani is going to crash and burn, and indeed that is more or less what we've seen happening in the last few weeks. One of the big questions looming in the background is whether or not you're going to get such a deadlock among the loser candidates among the Republicans that you get an orchestrated campaign around Mayor Bloomberg of New York City, who could very easily write out a check for $1 billion and finance his own presidential campaign, whether as an independent or a candidate for one of the major parties. This is really the sort of white knight Mussolini option from somebody who comes out of the financial establishment, whose only great political claim to fame is that he single-handedly assured Joe Lieberman's reelection to a Senate seat after he lost the Democratic primaries last year. So I think that among the Republicans, there is no visible, credible candidate. And as I said earlier, I think that at least for the time being, with a lot of flaws and weaknesses, that Hillary Clinton is emerging as the candidate who at least is willing to say something about one of the reality-based issues that the country is going to have to deal with and is already having to deal with, namely the massive home foreclosures, the blowout of the real estate bubble, and what we're going to do about it. Now, a few weeks back, Mr. LaRouche wrote a policy document which is called The United States Needs a Real Candidate. And that pamphlet of that document is now circulating in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies around the United States. Mr. LaRouche addresses that document to the person who will be elected next president of the United States, whether it's a he or a she. And he takes up the policy issues that have to be addressed during the primaries and during the general presidential campaign. And in the current issue of Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. LaRouche has a follow-on document, nominally a book review of a book by Professor Hankel, a leading German economist. But it's really a follow-on discussing the kind of economic policy that the next president must adopt. LaRouche's idea is that by generating a serious policy dialogue on the real issues that must be addressed sooner than later by the presidential candidates and by the next president, that you create the opportunity for one of these candidates to emerge and to function above his or her actual qualifications by virtue of the fact that there is a clear set of policies out there being widely debated, being supported by a growing base among the American population, so that in effect, if you don't have an FDR in the White House, you can create an FDR environment around a reasonably qualified, honest individual in the White House. And you can put a team together that can make it happen. And, of course, Lyndon LaRouche has to be a key player on that team for any of these ideas to work. But it's a pathway towards seeing our way through the worst crisis in modern history without the fact that there is no really, you know, genuine FDR figure among the whole lot of the candidates.
Jeff, let me just ask you, because we do have an email from Harun Hussein from the United Arab Emirates, who asked if Mr. LaRouche, or Dr. LaRouche, as he said, could endorse Ron Paul. Of course, many people have gravitated toward Ron Paul because he's been one of the most vocal opponents of fighting, continuing the fight of the war in Iraq. But how would you answer Harun Hussein?
Well, Mr. LaRouche has made a comment already based on similar questions that have come from a number of people. His short answer is that he really can't support Ron Paul's candidacy because when it comes to economic and monetary policy, Ron Paul's proposals and solutions don't work. They're much more drawn from the whole British school of a gold standard, and on those issues, he really kind of flunks the test. He is not a Rooseveltian American system economist in that sense. He's got a far more libertarian view, and at this point, minimalist government is not going to be able to deal with the kinds of problems we're dealing with. On a number of other issues, I have great respect for Dr. Paul. He's one of the Republicans who has truly sought out a bipartisan combination against the war policies of the neoconservative Bush-Cheney administration. So in some respects, I have a great deal of respect for him as a member of Congress, as a leading political voice. But on economic policy, which is going to be the big issue for the next presidency, I think he has a lot of wrongheaded ideas that would make matters worse, not better.
And, you know, we had he's from Keisha and my neck of the woods in Texas, and one of the jokes we used to have about him is never trust an obstetrician who's anti-labor.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, let me take up just quickly another email that we got, and then I'd like to open to Siri or Keisha if they have any questions or comments for you. This is from Viren in the Netherlands, so we're getting the international emails today. But basically, and Viren says that he agrees completely with what you said about the question of the chaos theory, the attempt to disrupt and create a clash of civilizations, and at the same time then bringing in Al Gore and trying to impose a Malthusian policy. And Viren asked the question, shouldn't we address the current project for world domination as a new Hitler project under the leadership of the same forces that engineered the First and Second World War? How would you answer him on that?
Yes.
Well, that was succinct.
I think he's got it right. And, you know, Mr. LaRouche, in this statement that's now posted as of earlier today on the LPAC and LaRouche Pub websites dealing with the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, takes up exactly that idea and that issue. And, yes, the targets of this new clash of civilizations are not Iran or not any of the countries of the Middle East, but the idea is to foment a conflict between the United States on the one side and Russia and China on the other, because this is a British game, and the British game is to make sure at all costs that you don't get a concert of cooperation between the U.S., Russia, China, and India, because that power configuration can handily defeat and crush the Anglo-Dutch financial empire.
And, Jeff, I'd just like to add one thing, because I know a lot of people are going to the Christmas movies, and one of the movies that's being hyped is Charlie Wilson's War, which makes the absurd proposal that Charlie Wilson, who's a charming, decent fellow, former congressman from East Texas, but that he toppled the Soviet Union through his support of the Afghan rebels. And, of course, it's just unfortunate that those same Afghan rebels later became the forces that were allegedly behind the attack of 9/11 through the Saudi operations and so on. And it misses a key point, which is that the Afghan war, just as we're seeing the chaos in Pakistan, is part of a longer-standing British operation designed precisely to engage the U.S. in these kinds of confrontations, the so-called Great Game. So I just wanted to get that out there. For those of you who think you're getting history by going to see a movie, it's sort of like the fractured fairy tales.
I heard the original title was supposed to be Charlie Wilson's Whore, and that they had to change it at the last minute.
Well, it would have had to have been Whores. So on that elevated note, Keisha and Siri, do you have any questions for Jeff?
Actually,
or anything else you'd like to bring up?
Yes. Actually, I did have a comment just reflecting on this idea of history that you're just speaking of. One of the things that, you know, it would be good to report is over this holiday period, over the Christmas week, the LaRouche Youth Movement took the initiative to, as Mr. LaRouche has said, to look back at the great ideas and the great historical developments of the United States and what has made the United States a great republic. And he just wrote a paper called it's on the Thanksgiving, looking at the need for leadership amongst the presidential candidates, but also looking back at what has to be understood about the United States as a great republic and the great patriotic system of the United States. And so I had the opportunity to travel along, and I'll make this report, I had an opportunity of traveling along with some of the other organizers up to New Jersey on Christmas Day, where we experienced a reenactment of the crossing of the Delaware by General Washington. And just reflecting on that, you know, as general, you're looking and you're imagining General Washington standing on the banks of the Delaware addressing the soldiers. And at that period of time, we're watching this reenactment as he's reflecting on the words of Thomas Paine, you know, saying that these are the times that try men's souls, that this is a period right now where great ideas, renaissance of ideas is really needed. And as people are really faced right now with a turbulent and trying times, you know, looking to the activities that we're doing, the activities of the LaRouche Youth Movement of Mr. LaRouche, as we have been tremendously fighting to revive these great patriotic ideas. And most people were probably spending their Christmas holidays, you know, trying to get through the shopping lines or, you know, in some type of escape of reality. But I found it very a great pleasure to be able to travel to Pennsylvania to stand right on the banks of the Delaware where General George Washington led the troops in the freezing cold weather and, you know, very tremendous conditions to fight for the ideas of the Republic that we are today fighting for on December 25th.
There is a report on that, including a section of Tom Paine's statement about the Sunshine Patriots as opposed to the heroic founding fathers. That's up on the LaRouche PAC website, so people can go to that. We have just a couple of minutes left. Siri, did you have anything else?
Yeah, actually,
go ahead.
I'd like to just ask to the panel, because Lynn has been laying out in recent papers, you have the Force of Tragedy paper, and then the paper Keisha just referenced, Let There Be a Time of Thanksgiving, where Lynn is laying out this question of a classical tragedy. And I know that this is something that I've been trying to figure out how to take into my everyday organizing the various layers of the population of all different ages and backgrounds and so forth, and also into the HVPA mobilization. How do you really capture somebody's imagination and get playing on the stage of their imagination the this quality that Lynn's referencing in this new Bhutto paper as well?
All right, well, just because of the limits in time, let me throw that out to Jeff then.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think there's two things that are always critical in really effectively organizing people. Number one, you've got to constantly come up with really imaginative ways to bust up their axioms, because as Lynn has written time and time again, the essence of tragedy is not the action of an individual, even a leading individual. It's the wrong-headed, axiomatic assumptions of an entire culture that lead to destruction unless they're broken up and changed. So one element always involves getting at the underlying assumptions that paralyze people and freeze them from doing the right thing. And secondly, always interjecting an element of confidence that there are reasonable and viable solutions to any problems, and that ultimately human creativity, when put to the task of solving problems, can make the discoveries that lead to a better tomorrow. And so this idea of always injecting optimism at the same time that you show no tolerance or respect for the wrong-headed axiomatic assumptions that have driven us to the point that we're on the verge of a collapse into a dark age, when civilization, by its very nature, ought to thrive on creativity and collaboration.
And that optimism comes not from being able to max out credit cards and buy houses that you'll never afford, but by actually working through the great ideas in science and culture and making them your own ideas, so that we see clearly the difference between ourselves as human beings and the animals that the British oligarchs are trying to reduce us to so they can herd us into a new fascist world order. So, Jeff, Siri, and Keisha, let me thank you for joining us this last show of 2007. We'll be back, as always, next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can find this archived at LaRouchePub.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.